Looking to propel your commercial real estate project forward? At Associated Bank, we've got you. With long-term relationships, expertise in your market, and prompt callbacks on inquiries. Contact a relationship manager today at associatedbank.com/CRE. Member FDIC.
We're on with Drew Lear, Senior Vice President and Relationship Manager at Associated Bank's Commercial Banking Group. Drew, welcome.
Hey, thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me.
I want to focus our conversation here off the top on the topic everybody is talking about, at least in the world of business, and that is the tariffs. We're seeing tit for tat on those, the U.S. imposing tariffs, reciprocal tariffs coming from China and the European Union and other places. Talk a little bit about how this is hurting Main Street or will hurt Main Street in America.
Yeah, I think it's pretty evident to see how it will hurt Main Street America. Obviously, you know, with the U.S. being one of the biggest economies in the world, we're a heavy importer, which is, you know, what's driving some of these tariffs in the mind of the president. But, you know, tariffs are essentially a tax on, you know, the imports that we pay or of what we bring into the country. So, you know, if you're looking at these numbers, it's a pretty dramatic tariff that's going to be, you know, pushed through. And I think what most people don't really understand is that it's not the governments that pay these, it's the companies that are doing the importing and exporting. So, you know, for the manufacturers that, you know, choose to manufacture in China, Vietnam, or, you know, outside the United States, you know, those companies are going to have to figure out a way to recoup the cost. I don't think any of them can really, you know, stomach, you know, 100% tariff, so to speak, from China, and or 46% from Vietnam. So, you know, they're going to have to pass those on because that's just going to be, you know, far and above any cost that they can absorb. So, you know, that's going to flow through to, you know, American consumers and the day-to-day prices that we pay for, you know, a whole host of goods. I think, you know, right now, depending on which research analysts you quote, you know, for example, the cost of a new car is going to rise anywhere from $8,000 to $12,000. So it is going to be pretty material while these tariffs are in place.
Yeah. And so talk to us a little bit about how small businesses can react. You mentioned passing costs on to consumers, but in some cases, the cost of an item could rise, as you mentioned, the cars, thousands of dollars. That's a little bit more than consumers would be willing to pay. I mean, is there a chance that some of these small businesses could go out of business because of this?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think larger companies have the ability to, you know, negotiate just given the sheer size of products they buy in bulk. You know, you saw a lot of companies towards the end of the year that were, you know, buying inventory in advance of these things to lock in current prices. But, you know, small businesses, which, as you know, are the backbone of America, don't really have the size and scale of a Walmart, so to speak, to do that. So, you know, there's only limited pricing power on their end, and they don't have the ability to go to suppliers and say, hey, we'll buy in bulk if you, you know, reduce the cost of what we're buying from you. So I absolutely think there could be some pain and a lot of business closures. And, you know, I was reading some articles on, you know, Chicago-based companies, and, you know, there was an example of a company that was selling bags, and, you know, they went to pick up their bags from a port, and they had to pay $15,000 due to the tariffs. And that's just a lot of money for a small business to stomach. So I think absolutely there could be, you know, a lot of businesses that could potentially go out of business if these tariffs remain in place. You know, historically, you know, in the last administration or in Trump's first administration, you know, when they added tariffs on China, you know, a lot of folks moved their manufacturing to lower cost countries like, you know, Vietnam and India. And since the tariffs that he just announced are kind of blanket across almost all countries, it's really hard to find, you know, lower cost manufacturing. And, you know, you're quoting a lot of small business owners that say, you know, they can't afford to do it in the U.S. and they also can't afford to find, you know, countries that can do it, you know, for under what they were, you know, previously getting before the tariffs came into play. So, you know, definitely some concern there.
Yeah. And some of these business owners are scratching their heads wondering why these tariffs are being used against Canada and Mexico, which we have, you know, have had good trade agreements with. I was reading one story about a local brewer, a craft brewer that imports aluminum from Canada for cans, aluminum cans from Canada. And he talked about not only having to raise prices, but perhaps having to lay off employees and maybe ending a couple of lines of his beer altogether. I mean, that would be destructive to small business.
No, absolutely. And, you know, again, I think, you know, the last time that we went through this back in, you know, the 2016 to 2020 Trump presidency, you know, there were companies that were spared. You know, I think he was really going after China in that one because he has, you know, called them a currency manipulator, an IP, you know, theft of IP and things like that. But this one, he spared no one. And, you know, there's really nowhere to hide out. And so, you know, only he can tell you why he, you know, took a toll on our trade partners. And I think that for him, it's a bigger agenda that he's looking at. You know, Canada and Mexico in his mind is, you know, the reason why we've had a lot of fentanyl imports, you know, a lot of, you know, the increase in drugs. So he's using tariffs to get them to, you know, stem the flow of those types of things into the country. So I think, you know, the tariffs were just his way of saying, hey, you need to help us with the drug inflows and things like that. So there's really no other way to do it. And, you know, he will say, you know, tariffs are the biggest negotiating chip he has. So, you know, he, you know, chose to, again, you know, hit our closest trading partners here domestically, which if the cost of beer goes up, I'm not going to be that happy. I don't know about you.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other part of the story here is you mentioned the fentanyl part of it. The president has said that he would like to jumpstart American manufacturing and force companies to start sourcing their products domestically. But we've been there and done that, haven't we? I mean, talk to us a little bit about what that scenario would look like and how much that would cost.
Yeah. I can't really pinpoint the cost, but you know, when I was looking at that earlier, you know, I was reading an article, I think, in the Wall Street Journal that, you know, said, you know, tariffs aren't exactly going to, you know, lead to a manufacturing boom. And, you know, I think, you know, there's reasons why, you know, folks decided to move manufacturing overseas, right? Today, I think the average manufacturing income in China is about $15,000 versus, you know, $45,000 to $50,000 domestically. And on top of that, you have, you know, other costs from a regulatory standpoint. You have, you know, health insurance, you know, retirement benefits. So it is just dramatically more expensive to, you know, manufacture domestically. And so I think, you know, that's a problem in and of itself. You know, we were here a long time ago and it was just getting much more expensive than to ship it overseas. So I think if you want to truly bring it back, most economists are saying it's just not that possible, right? It's going to be just way more expensive, which is also going to lead to, you know, higher costs in the same way that tariffs do.
Yeah. And even if you are able to do it in a lot of different fields, even if you're manufacturing something, let's say cars here or backpacks or purses or some sort of technology, some of the raw materials for that would have to come from some other countries as well. And China imports a lot of raw material into the United States. There are parts made in Mexico for cars here. So that really doesn't solve the problem, does it?
It does not. You know, I think I read a similar article that, you know, 60% of cars for Ford, you know, are manufactured domestically. But again, you've got the supply chain set up overseas. And, you know, I think, you know, 50, 60 years ago, it was much different when we were a manufacturing powerhouse. But now you've had 5 to 6 decades of a supply chain infrastructure being built overseas, you know, with all the different products and raw materials over there, and then bring maybe the finished product or do the final 10% of manufacturing here. So, yeah, we just don't have the infrastructure. And, You know, all the hedge fund folks that are coming out talking against this tariffs are saying, you know, you're not going to restart domestic manufacturing in days, weeks, or months. It's a multi-decade, multi-billion-dollar investment to do that. The administration did score some wins with some of the chip manufacturing here, and I think that does say a lot. But chips are a small component of the iPhone, right? So, you know, most of the supply chain is still based overseas. So you're talking a multi-decade transition to bring the manufacturing back in the way that I think that people would like to.
Drew, there have been several economic analysts who've talked about recession, fears of a recession, escalating trade war, causing those concerns to go up. Talk to us a little bit about that. Is that a real possibility? I know some people are saying we might already be in a recession, but I know you're watching the stock market and bond market and all those things. How is all that playing into this?
Yeah, I think in a perfect world, the president would have liked to, you know, initiate the tariffs, give a deadline, and then bring people to the table and negotiate. And what you're seeing now is that not happening. You know, the EU just announced retaliatory tariffs this morning. You know, there's been quite a sell-off in the bond market. The Treasury bonds are now yielding 4.5%, which is a pretty dramatic, you know, increase from Monday. So that's kind of screaming some, you know, not great things, knowing that that's the benchmark borrowing rate. So I think it's the retaliatory tariffs are just showing that people are not willing to just bend the knee to the current administration and that they're going to be in this for the long haul. So with that, you know, the stock market hates uncertainty, right? I mean, if you look at the VIX, which is the fear gauge, it's at 50 right now. And in a normalized environment, it's 15, 16, 17. And the Dow whipsaws multiple percentage points a day. You know, on Monday, in a span of about 10 minutes, it went from down 4%, up 4%, to back 4%. So until you have some clarity on where these tariffs really shake out, you're going to continue seeing volatility, I mean, we've whipsawed back and forth today multiple times, being up, down, up, down. So I think the market needs clarity on where are the tariffs really going to shake out. Is it going to be 100% for China? You know, is it going to be 46%? You know, are these companies going to negotiate? And with that, how much time is it going to take? So, you know, in my personal opinion, I think we're going to be in for some significant volatility over the next couple quarters. And, you know, again, we won't know until we get the GDP readings. But yes, I mean, a lot of folks think we're already entering into a recession.
The business community also likes stability. They don't like chaos. They don't like uncertainty. Talk to us a little bit about what you're hearing from local businesses on this. I know just a few months ago, we were talking to some of your colleagues on these thought leader conversations about how businesses had solid plans this year for growth, and they were planning to do some capital projects and do some hiring. Is all of that off the table now?
I don't know that it's off the table. I think the longer that it that this trade war remains in effect and whatnot is really going to be the driver of that. You know, the economy had been humming along pretty nicely. I mean, inflation was still a bit elevated, but it was getting back toward, you know, that neutral rate of 2% that the Fed wanted. So I think, you know, right now with the move in the 10-year, you know, that's going to impact the financing market. So, you know, companies that were looking to, you know, whether they were to make an acquisition, hire, grow at a factory, that really limits their ability to do that because it's going to be cost prohibited to raise debt to do that. So I think, you know, not to keep saying the same thing, but, you know, it's all going to depend on how long this drags out. You know, we did get a good jobs report a couple weeks ago, so the underlying economy was moving along quite nicely. But, you know, again, if inflation starts to, you know, creep back up, that could really start to scare a lot of companies, and then you'll see, you know, inflation start to rise, you could see layoffs, you could see a lot of different scenarios play out.
Drew, I want to talk to you about something else that came across our desk, the business desk here, that and we're watching pretty closely. It's happening in the Uptown and Edgewater neighborhoods in Chicago. The city of Chicago is looking at changing zoning laws to allow for more growth and development there along Broadway. And the ideas that have been presented here are quite extensive with new businesses, new planning. Talk to us a little bit about what that Broadway corridor in Uptown and Edgewater might look like in the future. I know it's one of the things that you and your colleagues in the commercial banking group deal with on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I think it's great, right? And, you know, reading through that, you know, they're looking at adding, you know, apartments and housing and, you know, again, businesses and anything that brings business and residents to a neighborhood is going to be, you know, beneficial all around. And as someone who lives just south of there in Wrigley, you know, I spent a lot of time up there and I love it. I think it's such a great, great part of the city. There's history, there's restaurants, there's culture. You know, I think the big issue with that, though, will be displacement. So I think they need to really look at doing it the right way and make sure that the current residents aren't displaced, because that's, you know, kind of happened in some of the other areas of the city. But I think the biggest thing they're trying to solve for is, you know, the lack of affordable housing. So again, I think, you know, doing it the right way, making sure that they're adding, you know, housing for folks that live there, because, you know, as you know, Chicago's facing an affordability crisis on the housing front. And if you drive up in the uptown, there's not a ton of high rises. There's not a ton of, you know, areas that, you know, folks can just, you can add a bunch of, you know, tourists and, or not tourists, but a bunch of new residents. So, you know, I think it's moving in the right direction. Like I said, anything that kind of helps bridge this affordability crisis we're facing is going to be, you know, a net positive for the city and for the local area.
As somebody who lives in that area, I often drive along Broadway and think, wow, this area looks ripe for development with new businesses. Totally. And other things. This would sort of provide that, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, there's a lot of, you know, vacant storefronts up there, and I think, you know, anything adding business will, you know, attract local people, right? I mean, when you live in an urban environment, you want things to walk to. You want, you know, restaurants, shopping, all that, and if you've seen what's kind of happened south of there and, you know, Southport, Armitage, and those types of areas, I think it's such a wonderful area. And again, I was just up there a couple days ago at the post office and just thinking the same thing. What a cool area. You know, you're close to the lake, close to the lakefront. I think it'd be great. Like I said, it's going to be a win-win for the locals and for the broader neighborhood.
All right, Drew, great conversation. How can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one if they want?
Honestly, you know, feel free to shoot me an email. I mean, I can, you know, get my contact info out there. I'm happy to always talk. You know, I love talking about markets, love watching it. I love Chicago and love when, you know, there's investment in neighborhoods, especially the ones that I live near. So, you know, if anyone wants to contact me, my, you know, info is just drew.lear@associatedbank.com.
All right, Drew, we'll talk to you next time. Thank you.
Much appreciated.